It's my podcast and I'll cry if I want to, cry if I want to, cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you. So there. And my apologies to Leslie Gore. And you know, Leslie Gore had a great little catchy little song called Maybe I Know. It was actually in the beginning of some new indie movie called The Blue Rose that I just watched. It's a very David Lynch-y ripoff about two young wannabe detectives a la Kyle MacLachlan in The Great Blue Velvet. I'm sure you've all seen that. And if you haven't, then stop this podcast immediately and go watch it. Okay, you can finish the podcast first, but then watch it. But yeah, The Blue Rose is extremely amateurish, it's ambitious, and maybe the director George Barron has some potential, but this one is a mess with some horrid acting. It is kind of a Blue Velvety ripoff and also some shades of Mulholland Drive. But anyway, back to the song, Maybe I Know. It's catchy as hell. Here's a little bit of that song. Maybe I know that he's been a cheatin'. Maybe I know that he's been untrue. But what can I do? And it's a nice little song, isn't it? But I do completely disagree with the premise of the song. It's like if your boyfriend or girlfriend is cheating, you know what you do? You end it. You break up. Fuck forgiveness. If someone cheats, that will always be lingering in the back of your mind, wondering if it'll happen again. It's a psychological mindfuck. I was in a relationship that was completely running on fumes. It was near its end. And my girlfriend actually told me that she had cheated on me. And then that just, you know, verified the end of the relationship. Maybe some people can make it work after that, but for me, it was a deal breaker. If you're like feeling the urge to cheat in a relationship, then just try and honestly work on it with your partner, you know, bring it up, be a stand-up person. Cheating to me is one of the lowest things a person can do. But speaking of just a completely unfathomable and horrendous act, I recently read a story in the newspaper that just flat out shocked me. So it turns out some guy in France had been drugging his wife. So she was basically in a deep sleep, and then he'd been raping her and also ushering in dozens of men to rape her while she was unconscious, and he was also filming it. And this was her husband of 50 years. I mean, this, I don't even get it. And just an absolutely unbelievable part of the story is that these guys that would show up would sometimes have to wait for an hour or so in the parking lot until the drugs took hold. I mean, the husband is an evil son of a bitch, but I can't even imagine guys waiting to go have sex with an unconscious woman. And the men's ages range from their 20s to their 70s. So, you know, it doesn't matter, young, old. They were all a bunch of scumbags. And I hope they get serious prison time. And hope they're served one meal of rancid dog food and a glass of urine to drink every day. If they're going to act like dogs, then they should be treated like dogs for the rest of their lives. And the woman could have chose to remain private. But after her husband was arrested, she has come out publicly, which is a pretty heroic thing really to do. She's quoted as saying, "I was sacrificed on the altar of vice." She came out publicly to put the shame on the accused men rather than on her. And she said, "I will try to rebuild my life. I don't know how. I wish her the best. And I wish nothing but pain and horror for her husband and the other men." A lot of men just behave badly, and I'm sure some women do too. But you know, guys, women are not just here to be receptacles for you. If you aren't having luck with women, but maybe it's something about you. Don't blame women or victimize them. And the author Margaret Atwood had a fairly accurate quote, I think. "At core, men are afraid that women will laugh at them. Women are afraid that men will kill them." When you get down to it, I think there's some truth in that. And yes, women do laugh at me. But that's because I'm usually telling jokes. And a seriously heavy quote from the Nobel laureate Wola Soyinka: "The man dies in all who keeps silent in the face of tyranny." I love that kind of shit. Okay, let's move on from that grim business. Let's talk about some manners or lack thereof, a little Phil Donahue, and more bullshit from Mark Zuckerberg.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, let's talk about some stuff that drives me nuts. Believe it or not, I do try to be exceedingly polite in public, and I always try to hold the door open for people. And the thing that steams me is when the person doesn't thank you for holding the door open for them. It's like, "Hey, asshole, it's not my job on the planet to be courteous to you, so fucking acknowledge it." And I generally will say, "You're welcome," if someone doesn't say thank you. And hopefully that makes them feel a bit like a shithead for a minute. And if I have to pull in front of someone on the freeway, like abruptly, I always kind of wave to be like, oh, hey, you know, I know that was kind of asshole-ish. Sorry about that, brother or sister. And just the other day, me and my mom were downtown in Folsom. Parking could be kind of a pain in the ass there. So when we were leaving, a guy was waiting for a parking space. So like in a very cool Peter Fonda-ish, Easy Rider style way, I pointed over to my car to let him know, like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm right here. I got out of the spot quickly, and then when I looked in the rearview mirror, the guy held up a peace symbol, again, a very Easy Rider-ish thing, and I waved back, and I was like, okay, man, that's how you do it. I do something nice, you say thanks, and then we go on being assholes for the rest of our lives. But for that moment, you know, it was a nice moment. And whenever I look in my rearview mirror, it can't help but feel cinematic to me. And I always think of the ending in Taxi Driver, where our anti-hero Travis Bickle, played by Robert De Niro, kind of looks at himself in the rearview mirror and perhaps for a moment sees that he's a madman, and then he pushes the mirror away. Eventually, we all push the mirror away. Does that even make sense? I don't know, but I kind of like it. What do you think? And the kind of corny self-help guru Leo Baskaglia said, too often we underestimate the power of touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. That is a nice little quote. And I don't know if that stuff can turn a life around, but I do think that it can turn a day around. And I guess a life is just made up of days and days and days. So hell, maybe those things can turn a life around. And so, yeah, me and my mom, yes, the previously mentioned mom, not the never-before-mentioned cyborg mother that I also have. But me and my human mom were at a restaurant in a winery in Lincoln, and these guys were ordering steaks next to us, and they were like, as rare as you can get, and bloody, and all that shit. And I'm like, guys, no one cares about your eating habits. I know guys love to say all that shit to be like manly men, and it's like truly manly men don't need to draw attention to themselves. Attention is already drawn to them. And the road to the winery and the restaurant is kind of windy. And it's like, guys, you know, people are going to be kind of sauced when they're driving out of here. Maybe make the street a little less perilous. I mean, unless you want me to drive into your precious vines. And speaking of decency, the talk show host Phil Donahue died recently. He was an intelligent, empathetic, and decent seeming guy with a shock of hair. His The Phil Donahue Show aired like late 60s to mid 70s, and it was later simply known as Donahue. But yeah, Phil Donahue was smart, engaging, and he was bringing a lot of super interesting topics that weren't really being brought up on daytime television. Things like, you know, women's rights, homosexuality, mental illness, and shit like punk rock and religion. Phil Donahue covered a lot of taboo topics, but with intelligence and without a lack of, like, judging things. I remember as a kid, like, some of the topics would be about sex or something I had no idea about. And I just remember being like, wow, what is that? I know I'm going to find out someday. His show eventually ended when kind of the landscape of daytime TV had been transformed or devolved into more conflict-based Jerry Springer-type shit, more flash, more sizzle, less substance. Just another road sign on the journey to our absolute stupidity and incivility, which we are approaching soon, travelers. And I heard a podcast about Phil Donahue, and it had a snippet with an episode where he interviewed the silly writer Ayn Rand. And Ayn Rand was so self-righteous, and she sounds like the biggest asshole on the planet on this interview. She's arrogant, lacking in charm or grace, and she's just an angry person. Some audience member asks, like, a question, and basically Ayn Rand says she doesn't want to speak with someone so ignorant. And Phil Donahue was like, hey, she was just asking a question. She wasn't, you know, what are you treating her like that for? But Ayn Rand remained belligerent. Anyway, she was a complete loser of a person. But I do want to say rest in peace, Phil Donahue. You were kind of a legend, man. And briefly, I don't know how it is in your hometown, but in Sunnyvale and in Los Angeles, they lock up the fucking toothpaste at like CVS or Walgreens. So every time I have to buy some, it's like crowded as shit, and I have to press the customer service button where the toothpaste is and then wait until some lazy bastard slumbers over and unlocks the drawer. I thought criminals never brush their teeth anyway. Who's stealing all the toothpaste, goddammit? And I know batteries are frequently stolen, so I get it, but do you guys have to make the battery package so difficult to open that it almost requires a chainsaw to open it? I bought the fucking batteries. Here's the money. Here's the receipt. At least make the package a little bit easier to open, okay? Are we good? Yeah? Okay, cool. Now let's do another little recurring segment here. Dumb shit Mark Zuckerberg does. He recently had a 7-foot ugly-as-shit sculpture made of his wife, Chan. It's garbage art, exactly what you would think would come from the clueless, tone-deaf Zuckerberg. It's in their backyard, and Zuckerberg wrote, "Bringing back the Roman tradition of making sculptures of your wife." It's tacky, it kind of resembles Medusa from Clash of the Titans, and it's just a waste of money. How about donating that money to the homeless or something? A lot of these tech guys have endless wealth. They could be doing so much more to help other people, but they don't fucking get it. And in the end, like Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver, they may look at themselves in the mirror and fleetingly say to themselves, "Man, you fucked up. You should have helped other people out so much more." Ah, well. And I gotta tell you, I do hate like ostentatious displays of wealth. Whenever I see an over-the-top, ridiculously expensive car, I always flash back to my youth with the indelible commercial for Grey Poupon mustard. Some rich guy is eating in the back seat of his Rolls Royce or something, and some other rich motherfucker pulls up besides him and says, "Pardon me, do you have any Grey Poupon?" I guess it was like a mustard that was trying to be kind of fancy, and I swear the advertising kind of worked in my little brain. I always wanted to buy Grey Poupon mustard, and my parents, I think, were all like, always like, "That's too fucking expensive." I think I would buy it when I would go visit my grandparents, though, and I do remember it tasting pretty good. And whenever I see like a really ridiculously fast, flashy, expensive as shit Lamborghini or something, I always want to pull up next to them, roll down my window, and just be like, "Excuse me, you must have a really small dick." And I swear I came up with a brilliant idea, like a big calendar-looking thing where you can flip from page to page, and in big, bold, block letters, it will say something that you can hold up to people while driving. Like one card would say, "You must have a small dick," or "You drive like shit," or "No one drives under the speed limit, you asshole." Well, you get the idea. And in all honesty, I think flashy cars, flashy clothes, and even sometimes tattoos are just ways for people to say, "Hey, look at me. Look at all of this. Aren't I rich? Aren't I interesting and complicated?" It's like, no, not really. Like, you want to talk for a couple minutes? Then I could tell if you're interesting. The internal is interesting, not the external, you dumbass. And in all honesty, if I was rich, the nicest thing I would drive is that high-end Honda Civic Sport hatchback. I think it's called Type R. That's about as high-end as I would go. And I was just kind of slightly stoned the other day sitting in my apartment, and I sometimes come up with phrases or things that I picture being said in movies or something. And sometimes I will crack myself up and be like, "Oh my God, this is the most genius thing ever." And then later on when I think about it, I'll be like, "This is the dumbest thing ever." But there is a Venn diagram where genius and dumbass meet. Anyway, the saying was, "Welcome to the smorgasbord, gentlemen." Best delivered in kind of a Dom DeLuise style. Anyway, is it good? I don't know. You be the judge. The judge, jury, and executioner. And hey, have any of you seen the utterly ridiculous, like, Tommy Copper infrared device thing on TV with the guy from Law & Order SVU or SUV or whatever the fuck it is, Christopher Maloney? The guy is obviously on testosterone or something. He's all jacked up, and the commercial is like these utterly ridiculous scenes of him barely clothed with these weird, like, infrared body wraps. He's like sitting in his living room in shorts and no shirt. And the stupidest scene is where he's like making a sandwich with no shirt on, and he has this fucking infrared wrap on. It's corny as hell. It's so hammy, and it's extremely fun to watch. Okay, some more bullshit, and then let's talk about a movie. I'm pretty tall, and the Achilles heel for tall people is the back. Or maybe that's the Achilles back. But yeah, anyway, once or twice a year, I'll have some epic back pain. I'll use like lidocaine spray to excess, or like slap on one icy hot patch after the other. Those patches do work instantly, but they peter out pretty quick. And they are cold as shit when you put them on, and they kind of hurt to take them off. So yeah, it's kind of a pain. But speaking of hot, my mom and I, again, we're seeing another pattern here. We're driving once, and like slowly, steadily, my ass cheeks were like getting hotter and hotter. And I couldn't really comprehend what was going on. I just kept driving uncomfortably. And finally, I just literally said out loud, I was like, "Why is my ass burning?" And I guess at some point in my gesticulations, yes, I gesticulate. It sounds dirty, but it's not, I swear. But I must have turned on the seat warmer and slowly was cooking my ass. I run hot. I don't think I've ever turned on a heater, and certainly never an ass heater. and this obviously wasn't planned, but literally when I just was talking about my burning ass, my ass was burning. And I looked down, and in my movements on my couch while I'm recording this podcast right now, I fucking spilled my coffee. So the thing like ran down the side of this couch and hit my butt. So goddamn it. But anyway, some movies. The new Beetlejuice is out. It's getting mixed reviews. I probably will check it out. I do love Michael Keaton. And speaking of Beetlejuice, a little bit of interesting trivia for you. The first DVD that Netflix rented was, wait for it, Beetlejuice. That wasn't too hard, was it? But yeah, keep that in your back pocket to impress no one, okay? So I finally got around to watching Ty West's Maxine, M-A-X-X-X-I-N-E, the third of a trilogy starring Mia Goth as our lead character, Maxine. It's about a porno star who's trying to go legit. It's set in 1980s Hollywood, full of porn, cocaine, and bad hair, for some pretty cool music, and it's well fucking shot, no doubt. Talk about getting some bang for your buck as far as locations. There's some scenes on the Hollywood streets, a scene shot in Hollywood Forever Cemetery, a scene at the Hollywood sign, or likely a constructed set to make it look like it that way. But the scenes that totally made my day were shot on the Psycho backdrop at Universal Studios. I mean, I love that that still exists, and every time I go on the Universal backlot tour, the Psycho house is my favorite. I mean, how iconic can you get? And I am slowly becoming Norman Bates, so I kind of feel a kinship with the movie, you know. I'm just kidding. Sort of. Mother? But back to Maxine, Ty West is talented for sure. He makes some cool, kind of stylish and short little movies. He's a pretty good director. He's got style to burn. 2009's House of the Devil was one of his kind of early interesting movies. And Maxine has an interesting cast. Kevin Bacon, Bobby Cannavale, Giancarlo Esposito, Michelle Monaghan. And the first half has an undeniable Brian De Palma vibe. But somewhere along the way, the script just kind of falls apart. It's really well shot, very accurately 1980s-ish, but to be honest, the script is just pretty weak. There's little suspense to be had, honestly. It's got all the technical touches, but it's kind of lacking a heart. It's a very solid homage to 1980s movies, but it's just lacking something. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's totally worth watching. There are some great moments. Mia Goth is pretty fantastic in it. And like I said, the first 45 minutes are solid, but then it just kind of fizzles. I do think Ty West probably has a great movie in him, but this isn't it. But again, completely worth checking out. And also in the movie is the kind of genius indie movie director Larry Fessenden, or Fessenden, I don't know. Anyway, he plays a security guard. He was an early Ty West booster. Dude, Larry Fessenden is kind of an indie movie legend. Please check out some of his movies. His most recent movie called Blackout from 2023 is kind of about a werewolf. The lead actor kind of sucks, but it's got some thrills. I completely love 2006, The Last Winter, set in the Arctic. It's got a great James LaGrosse as an environmentalist who is studying the impact of oil drilling. It's also got the intense Ron Perlman, a.k.a. the original Hellboy, the always solid Connie Britton, and one of my all-time favorites, the character actor Kevin Corrigan. People start dying, weird shit starts going on, and it seems like Mother Nature is taking revenge on the ravaging of the land. It's subtle, it's kind of a slow burn, but I thought it was pretty masterful. Larry Fessenden always delivers the goods. And an amazing double feature would be The Last Winter and Session 9. They're both kind of psychological horror movies. Well done, well shot. Please check those out, okay? All right, anyway, I think that's about it for this episode. Let's try and not be assholes to each other this week, okay?